The voters spoke loudly about our city's biggest asset, but are plans in the works to someday privatize JEA anyway? Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast, too, on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, concerns about the future of JEA and its leadership have officials speaking out once again. You can get on the line now and add your voice to the conversation at 549-2937. Then later, it's a new treatment for veterans with PTSD. We'll check out a new ketamine clinic in Jacksonville. Plus, deck the chairs, lights up the beaches this holiday. That's coming up, too. All of that ahead this morning. But first, this hour, we've got a new look at the future of the city's publicly owned utility, JEA. Now, a new bill moving through Jacksonville City Council would change conditions for any future sale of the utility. This comes after voters in the city overwhelmingly approved a straw ballot measure on Election Day stating that the public needs to have a say in whether JEA is privatized. At the same time, some on the council are raising concerns about the utility's process for selecting a new CEO. Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Schellenberg has been a vocal critic of all of this, and he joins us now in studio. Councilman, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for being with us. And here's our question to callers. What are your questions and concerns about the future of JEA? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org or tweets to @MelissaInJax. Okay, Councilman Schellenberg, let's begin with this new bill moving through the council. This comes after the voters overwhelmingly approved this straw ballot saying they want to have a say in whether any percentage above 10% of the utility is privatized, is sold. Can you tell us about this measure now that the council is considering? It would also change conditions for any future sale of JEA.
I look at it this way. I think the citizens are a lot smarter than we give them credit for, and elected officials, I think we should listen to them. And when you have over 70% of the people saying that we want a voice in JEA, I think that's reflective of what they see, and I see the concerns about transparency, about what's going on with the interim and potential permanent managing director. I believe that we should look, as JEA is one of the biggest assets of the city, and as the biggest asset, we citizens, elected officials, everybody should know what the value of JEA is now and how it's going to meet the challenges going forward. Because if we don't, we'll end up like Sears and Kmart and what Sears is going for. And for those that are older, Eastman Kodak, you have to deal with issues currently and what they see going forward.
Now, the net proceeds to the city from selling JEA have ranged in estimates from as low as $1.7 billion to nearly $6 billion. The whole idea of selling the utility got tabled earlier this year after there was so much controversy and pushback about it. And now on the council, you're moving through this measure that would make it harder to sell JEA. But at the same time, earlier this week, you, Councilman Schellenberg, raised a lot of concerns about what you see as a lack of oversight over this power provider. In particular, you express frustration that you have been unable to get a meeting with the company's interim CEO, Aaron Zahn, until after the board of JEA decides whether to elevate him to the permanent CEO position. This comes after we also learned that Zahn, Mayor Curry's favorite, scored the lowest on a series of leadership metrics, scored lower than the other candidates JEA is looking at to become the utility's new CEO, the narrative being that perhaps the fix is in for Aaron Zahn since he might go along with City Hall's desire to privatize this utility against the wishes of the council and the people. And so you've expressed a lot of frustration about this.
I'll go backwards a little bit. So when the request for people interested in this permanent job went out, I think that most people were surprised by how much, who was asking and what was going on. And some of the candidates were outstanding. Okay. And we narrowed them down. I was not able to interview any of them. I looked at the resume and I think three of them just like cream of anything. They just came right up on top. Well, unfortunately, one of the three decided to drop out. He was a candidate that was coming from TECO. And then when there were two others, one from San Antonio, one from Sacramento, and then we had a lady, a competent lady from that was running the Bahamas Electricity. And then the bottom person was actually Aaron Zahn in the evaluation. Unfortunately, I think what you're seeing now is the people that are inside the four, they're looking at it and maybe seeing the same things that my concern was that the pick is already in and they're dropping out. We had, obviously, the TECO person drop out. I heard yesterday that the person from Sacramento has dropped out. And the only reason they do that is because they see something that's fishy out there. And I believe that's what's happening.
You believe this process is fishy?
Yes, because I think that why would you apply for a job and then all of a sudden the excuse that the guy has in Sacramento says, well, my family's here, my grandparents, all those things are worked out when you apply for the job. You've already talked to your family. So I think it was a red herring why he said he wasn't doing it. But my concern is, so now we have just three people in there. And one is from San Antonio that even though I have not interviewed him, I have talked to business people that know of him, and he is just above and beyond everybody. And so I hope he stays in and hope he gets it because he's just amazing. And then we have the person who's running the Bahamas, which had better credentials than Aaron Zahn. And then Aaron Zahn, as you said, during the evaluation was the lowest grade.
Okay. Is it your belief, though, that the fix is in for Aaron Zahn, that the board, most of whom are allies of this mayor, will appoint Aaron Zahn to the permanent CEO position? And do you believe that may well be done so that a long-term plan to privatize the utility can be executed?
Well, I think that I don't know what the administration position is per se, but it appears to me that they like Aaron Zahn. Now, he does, if you looked at all the resumes that came in and they narrowed them down to nine, there was somebody very comparable to Aaron Zahn in the mix, and they immediately dismissed him because he didn't have the experience. But we kept Aaron Zahn in the mix. But if you did a blind, like they do blind taste test, if you took all the names off of all the resumes that came in and possibly where they were from, would Aaron Zahn be in the top 10? I'm not sure, or top nine. I'm not sure.
We're going to go to your calls for Councilman Matt Schellenberg about JEA's future in just a moment at 549-2937. Give us a call. Okay, so you asked for a meeting with Mr. Zahn, and you wanted to talk about JEA's investment in the Plant Vogtle nuclear plant in Georgia. This is an albatross around JEA's neck. We're talking about delays, cost overruns, credit rating downgrades, a bad deal for JEA. You wanted to talk to Zahn about that and were unable to get a meeting until after the CEO is selected.
Correct.
Which could very well be him.
Well, let's go back and understand the details. Well, I sent two questions to the CFO. He was the interim at the time. Now he's the CFO. Two questions. What is the power demands that we would require of Vogtle when we made the deal? It's 10%. Because of the challenges at Vogtle, what is the number now that the power usage would be from nuclear power? And it would be around 13 to 18%. Now, I asked the CFO, I texted him, he was on vacation. He texted back and said, someone will get back to me in a quick time. Fortunately, Mr. Zahn contacted me and we're talking over the phone. This was like on a Tuesday. And he goes, it's much more complicated than the questions you asked. And I said, I understand that, but this is what I want to know right now. And I'll move forward on other questions. He goes, well, let's meet later this week or next week. Well, I sent out an email to his staff. I got back. No, he won't see him until the 28th. And this is at the beginning of November. Well, it went from on the phone call later this week or next week till 3-4 weeks later. And I just thought that was inappropriate. And he responds in the newspaper.
You're the liaison to JEA.
Yeah, I'm the liaison. And I have been for a year and a half. And unfortunately, up until recently, the last couple of months, I sit down in the audience and just observe. I don't know why we have a liaison if you don't get to participate in conversation, ask questions. But my point is this. Why is it that it's so difficult? No, going back to Mr. Zahn. He was correct. I have met with Aaron Zahn about twice in that 6 week prior to that, but that was on his request because he was asking about legislation and he wanted to talk to me about before a board meeting about Vogtle. That was his request. I finally asked him for the request to meet him, and he puts me off 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay, let's go to some calls now. What are your thoughts and comments about the future of JEA? The utility will select a new CEO on, I believe it's November 27th, in a week. And the process has drawn intense criticism that it has not been a transparent or fair process. There are ongoing concerns about whether there are secret plans to privatize the utility, how JEA will handle its ill-fated investment in a nuclear plant in Georgia, and more. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Jack is in East Arlington. Hi, Jack. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, I just want to know what's the big deal? We're going to get these billions and billions of dollars for JEA, then what, in 5 years, then what's going to happen? Where's the rest of the money that JEA gives the city of Jacksonville every year? Where that's going to come from if we sell it to DuPont or somebody else out there?
Yeah, and that's the big question. We would get this big windfall of cash, Matt, but then going forward, we wouldn't get that annual contribution.
I think this is where the administration has gone wrong. I think that we should know what the value of it is. And you have a good question. I have the biggest concern about if we do sell it, if the legislators, I'm going to be termed out, do the right thing. Now, you could do two things that are very important. If you pay off the Better Jacksonville plan, you bring the pension forward, which will save billions of dollars, and then you pay off the city debt, which is $1 billion, and then you're still left with $2 billion. Anybody that buys JEA, it's actually a better deal ultimately for city because they don't pay ad valorem taxes. You pay ad valorem taxes on your house, your business, whatever. When you net it all out, we actually be getting more money than what they're giving us because if you pay off the debt, as I said, get the pension done, then the cash flow for the city is substantially better, but only if the legislators and administration explain this to you. And this is why this bill that's before the city council, I'm in favor of it. And I'll tell you one reason. If the mayor, any mayor, cannot explain what the important, why you would sell it for $4 billion, $5 billion or more, and he can't explain it in simple terms, then you can't sell it. He's got a job to do. And it's just like, I'm not going to bully this through.
This measure before the city council would effectively make it harder to privatize JEA. Is that a fair way to describe it?
It only make it harder if the mayor cannot actually go out there and explain why it's important to do it. The net numbers, yes. My biggest concern is if we sell it, this money has to go here, has to go there, and then the remaining money cannot be spent at all. It will only be used to make up for the promises we have made for certain areas of town that have been neglected.
The mayor is up for re-election. Mm-hmm. He has largely drawn positive reviews in his first term, with the exception of this matter, JEA. Do you believe that this controversy and the public perception about the way it's been handled will draw a challenger to Lenny Curry?
I think it will. I think this is unfortunate. I get quoted in the paper a lot, and I appreciate it because I think a lot of things the mayor is doing is very good, and it's moving forward. Instead of looking back, which we do need to move forward, and the pension obligation really hurt us substantially over an eight-year period because it just went out of whack, and hopefully we'll take care of it by the sales tax and all that kind of stuff. But I think that he's vulnerable because he hasn't – I'm not him, but I would tell the citizens, hey, JEA is a valuable asset. I would – spend $1 million or $2 million trying to figure out what it's true worth. Go out there, figure out what it's worth. And if it comes back and said it's only worth a net nothing, I'm not selling it. But we have to ask the question, how is it going to meet the challenges going forward? Because almost every business at your end or anybody else's is being disruptive. How is JEA, a minnow in the world of power usage, going to meet the challenges going forward?
Tracy on the South Side. Hi, Tracy. Good morning.
Hi, first of all, I agree with Matt and what he's saying about JEA. It's kind of like selling off your birthright. But to me, it's just a symptom of a larger issue, which is the consolidation of power in the mayor's office, the appointment of cronies to boards of commissions and independent authorities, and even as interim and leadership heads of those authorities. I think what we've seen is the creation of a political machine in Jacksonville, the likes of which we haven't seen since the 1950s and 60s with Hayden Burns.
And are you? I guess you've lived here a while that you would know about that era in Jacksonville politics, Tracy.
Yes, I've lived in Jacksonville all my life.
Okay, all
and
right.
And he used to be a constituent, and he's a great guy. And he and I don't always agree, but I think it's important that we actually have a conversation. Thanks very much for your call, Tracy.
Thanks, Tracy. Okay, is City Hall a political machine now? You know, and I've mentioned this on the show before, machine politics, you tend to think of the big northern metros, Tammany Hall in New York, the Daily political machine in Chicago, and others, where, you know, there's this whiff of cronyism and corruption and the fix being in for certain things. That's a narrative that does seem to have taken hold around this mayoral administration over the last few years, in particular about this process, this whole notion of whether JEA should be privatized. Is City Hall running a machine?
I don't know, but I represent the District 6, which is, for those that don't know, it's basically Mandarin. It's a little bit bigger than Mandarin. But my point is this. I represent 70,000 people. I listen to everybody. All of us are not going to agree on everything, but being engaged and listening to people, talking to people, getting other opinions are very important. When it appears that your way is the only way and don't reach out and talk to other council people or go out in the community and listen, not talk, I think this is a bad place to be. The mayoral forum was at JU, and they do a fabulous job over there, and they had the six living mayors there, and every one of them liked the power of a strong mayoral thing. It's good to exercise that power, but if you exercise it all the time, it's not a good place to be.
Let me ask that again. The last thing that you said, if you exercise that power all the time, it's not a good place to be. What do you mean by that?
If you think, if you just push things through because you can get 10 votes, and it's not very difficult to get 10 votes on the city council, okay, in my opinion. And it would be like the Lanahan rule, because I haven't been around as long as Tracy has, but I've been around him since 1962. But it's not that difficult to get 10 votes almost on anything. But is it good for the city, both currently and long term? I'm not sure if getting things done your way all the time is the right way. Sometimes you should back up and listen a little bit more than be willing to push through things that aren't so appropriate.
And if you're just tuning in, as we speak with Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Schellenberg about JEA and its future, we'll go back to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. But let's go to a few tweets. Lots of tweets coming in to the show. Here is one from Valerie. She is with the local union and has been lobbying against JEA sale. Valerie Gutierrez. Does Schellenberg plan on supporting resolution 2018-142 that will give the community the final decision on whether or not JEA is sold?
Valerie, I think that I answered that earlier. I said that if the mayor can if this mayor or any other mayor cannot explain why it might be important to sell it, then it shouldn't be able to be passed. I think the citizens do have every right, and I think the citizens ultimately do make good decisions going forward. And I think this is one of those things. It will impact Jacksonville forever, and I think that's important to a mayor to understand that if he decides to sell it. And if he can't convince 50% plus one vote, then he shouldn't be able to sell it.
Steven tweets the show, with all of the issues of Plant Vogtle, no one is going to give a high bid for JEA. Let's just ride out what JEA has begun, but with a new, experienced, and outside CEO. Chad tweets the show, Georgia nuclear plant under the table sale. Zahn won't meet with the council member when requested. Who is protecting JEA's future? An equal branch of oversight to the mayor. And here are just a few more. I agree with Councilman Schellenberg. If it's sold for $5 billion, not $1 billion, that's one thing. But the mayor will not explain the value because it's not where he wants the profit to go to pay off debt. And here's one more tweet. When is the city council going to change how the JEA board is selected? The mayor should not be able to stack the board. That's why we are in this mess. When Mayor Curry was elected, one of his first acts was to purge the city's boards and commissions of people that were sitting on them at the time. They are actually staggered for a reason, so that they outlast the whims of varying mayoral administrations. But he did do a big purge, and he stacked the JEA board and some other boards and commissions with loyalists. So what about that? Should the city council look at that process?
I think we should, and this is one of those things. I think that the chair of the JEA is exactly right. I don't have any rights to go out there and talk, be on the committee, ask questions. He's exactly right, because council liaison basically goes over there and just sort of listens and doesn't have the input. He, by the way, he's been very generous. He always gives me 3 minutes to opine about what my thoughts are, but that's not the same thing as engaged in the conversation and concerns that as a representative. By the way, the citizens, city council, the mayor, we all own JEA. We own it 100%. And why we can't have a dialogue and have somebody over there having a conversation and ask questions that might be pertinent to me or the citizens, I think is off-putting, I think.
JEA is an independent authority. It makes an annual contribution to the city budget in the amount of,
about $118 million.
$118 million. If JEA is sold for, let's just say JEA is sold for $3 to $4 billion to Florida Power and Light or another player, the city gets that money. Mm-hmm. It pays down some debt.
Pays down all the debt.
Pays
We'd
down
be the only
all
city
the debt.
That would be debt free in the country.
Okay, we'd be debt free.
Well, let me say debt free. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
But going forward, we would not get that annual contribution.
Yes, but if we paid off our debt, you realize how much we pay in debt every year that comes off, just like everybody else's, $100 million. They only give us $118 million, but we have to pay, because of the debt of the city, about $100 million, give or take. Let's say 90. But they also, whoever buys it, has to pay ad valorem taxes. And you know what that number is? About $60 million. So if you add them all up, just those two numbers, it's $150 million. They're only contributing to us $118 million. We'd be ahead $32 million. And think of it this way. Look at all the things we can do that were promised back 50 years ago that we haven't done. And even now, because of the pension problems that we had for the last 10 years, the things, the quality of life issues like roads and things like that, that were neglected during those times. This is I'm not saying sell it, but I'm giving you the numbers. You sell it, you pay off the debt, the actual overall benefit to the city and the taxes is much greater than keeping all the, and I've still got $2 billion left.
So when you talk like that, it sounds as though you're making the case for why we should sell this utility.
No, not necessarily. I'm not selling it unless I know what the value of it is. And I said earlier, I think that the city should make a commitment, spend $1 million or $2 million, hire the best there is, and say, JEA, where are we now? Where's the future, and where is the value, and what can we possibly get for it? And then the mayor can step up and say, hey, we got the information. Listen, citizens, should we keep it or don't give it, and have a dialogue with it, not saying we push it through. I'm just giving you an example that potentially selling it is more beneficial. He said it's a bad place to be, whoever called, that we will never get any more money. No, we'll actually get more money on a yearly basis. And that's my point. It had nothing to do with selling or not selling. I think that there's two sides of every coin.
Okay. And it's 549-2937. John is on the South Bank. Hi, John. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Yes. What most people don't realize is that Plant Vogtle has an $8.2 billion federal guarantee on that job, and that's what they're after. That job has been so mismanaged that I'll give you two examples. Browns Ferry, Alabama, and Watts Bar, Tennessee. Both of those were brought on time and on budget. They've gone through four contractors, and if they would have brought in Bechtel at first and did the same thing, they could have changed things. But no, that's why they shut down Jenkinsville, South Carolina. That's a sister plant of Westinghouse.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Thanks for all that, John.
And, okay. And they walked away.
Uh huh. Okay. Yeah. All right. What about that, Matt Schellenberg?
Well, two things. Interesting. Vogtle has two nuclear power plants that are working perfectly. This is 3 and 4. And my point is that, yes, Westinghouse went in there. They guaranteed the actual contract, and they went broke. And during that process, a Japanese company actually bought them, Toshiba. And they basically guaranteed, you know, some money to finish up the project. Even if – my point is this. Even if – two things. I think it might be a national security issue to have a nuclear power plant there to provide electricity to the southeast. Second of all, that's why I was asking the questions of the chief financial officer. I said, what impact does it have on a resident if the power price goes up. Everybody talks about $2 billion. Yes, it's a 20-year commitment. Divide 20 into $2 billion. It's a $100 million problem every year. Now, the question is, you don't know during that 20-year period, nuclear power might, at this, even at this price, might be cheaper than anything else out there. I don't know. And no one knows that answer.
Brad in San Marco. Hello, Brad. Hi, Brad. You're on the air.
Yeah, my question was to Mr. Schellenberger. In your calculus, you're saying it's going to be a net gain to the revenue stream of the city. What is the cost of selling JEA going to mean to my electric bill? Because JEA serves us at a discounted rate. I want to know if that's included in your calculus, and what is that going to cost me?
Sure. And that's, of course, why I think we've seen the public so skeptical of this whole idea. They don't want their rates raised, and they perceive that if we now have FPL running electricity in the city of Jacksonville, we're going to have higher rates.
Okay. This is all questions are good. The fact of the matter is Florida Power and Light electricity is cheaper than JEA, and it's partly because Florida Power and Light has flexibility that JEA does not. Florida Power
still,
and Light
has... They have a profit motive. Wouldn't they eventually raise our rates?
No, actually, first of all, if they buy JEA, they can't raise the rates on the current customers. And that was part of the... That would be part of the conversation if JEA ever got to that point. What are the rates going to be? And all I can say is Florida Power and Light has five options: nuclear, natural gas, oil, wind, and solar. So they have flexibility in how they allocate the usage to make sure that their rates are always low to their residential customers. JEA doesn't have that option. We had coal, we had gas back in the 70s, and we had the highest electric rates in the country. Then we went to coal. And then we said we need to diversify our power. That's why we went to natural gas and also looked at nuclear back about 10, 12 years ago, which made perfect business sense. Unfortunately, the nuclear has gone a little awry, and maybe it can come back and still be part of the picture, but not as big a picture. But we still only have three options. We're going to solar, natural gas, and nuclear. That's three options. We need more options. We need to be able to move, and depending on the cost of each of these going forward, how we're going to allocate those costs to an individual company or individual.
Well, that gets back to the other issue you came to talk about today, leadership.
Right.
These questions are exceedingly complex, and whatever the fate of the utility, a number of public officials and other stakeholders, such as yourself, have raised concerns about the process for selecting the best possible leader for this city-owned, or whether it becomes private or not, this city-owned asset. And so any further moves on your part before the board meets on November 27th to pick a new CEO?
I think that the fact that you've asked me to be here to at least ask the questions, and I look at it, I hate to have a football analogy, but would I rather have Tom Brady running JEA or Blake Bortles? And I think that's the difference between the guy and the woman have the advantages over Aaron Zahn. He's a nice guy. I'm not arguing that point, but is he the best for Jacksonville? I think that the gentleman from San Antonio, who's running the largest municipal power plant, he's the second in command. He wants to come over here. He's a smart guy. He's been in the business. He knows what's out there. And then you have the woman from Bahamas that's had issues, you know, because of hurricane. She's had a lot of things that she has had to deal with that JEA has had over the last couple of years because of our hurricane. And then we have someone who's just been there for about 7 months.
Okay, and here's an email from Johnny. He emails the show, would plans for Florida Power and Light to build solar farms be a potential reason for the JEA sale? Second question, why is Jacksonville City Council using mob-type tactics in this sale of JEA? Whenever someone tries to hide something, it's no good. When a child has a bad report card from their hides a bad report card from their parents, no good. When you kill someone and try to hide the body, no good. City Council is trying to hide the seller of JEA, and that's no good. This has eroded public trust in our local government. Now, to be clear, I don't think City Council is the body that has been trying to push through the sale of JEA. But what about his overall point that this whole process has eroded public trust.
I think that that's mostly correct. And that's why you had the vote about JEA that was, what, 72, 74%? It was unbelievable. And it's because the citizens feel like they're not getting any input. And I believe in transparency, telling the citizens, what's going on? Let them know. There's nothing wrong with letting them know and having them have some kind of explaining to them why you're doing something. If you just tell them we're going to do this without explaining to them, I don't think it's a good place to be. And I believe that my parents taught me to be respectful to everybody and do the best you can and try to do every day what's good for the citizens as an elected official. And that's what I'm trying to do. I could be wrong on a lot of things, but I think that I'm asking questions that I think that you, the citizens, are asking, and I get to ask them sometimes on Melissa Ross's show, but sometimes at JEA, and I have the 3 minutes of public comment.
We're getting more public comment on Twitter, more tweets coming in for you. Of course, the rates will be lower at first, and then they'll increase in order to recoup the purchase price. That's in reference to a private utility.
They have to go to the Florida Power Power, I can't remember the name of it, but they can't raise rates unless they go to Tallahassee to prove that they need to raise rates.
Another tweet, Jacksonville has one of the most pristine sources of drinking water in the region. They also have their own on-site lab. A new owner might change that. And so lots of questions and concerns really about this idea of changing what we have now. And with all of that said, as we mentioned earlier, the JEA board meets November 27th to select its new CEO. You are termed out on the city council, Councilman Schellenberg.
Yeah.
And so there will be new leadership later this year on the council. We have City Council President Aaron Bowman, the new president. We hope to have him on the show soon as well. But as you leave this public body, is this, I guess, your biggest priority as you cycle off the council?
I think it is, because I think the citizens recognized by their vote a couple of weeks ago that this is the biggest asset of the city. And as the biggest asset, we should be as clear and precise and do everything we can to find out what it's worth. It might not be worth anything. I have no idea, and no one on the council knows. I'm not in that business. I would hire somebody, and I'll go back. I would spend $1 million or $2 million to find out two things. What is it worth, and how are we going to meet the challenges? Get some experts out here that have a incredible knowledge about what's in the world out there. And I think that's what the citizens are asking. What is out there? How are we going to meet these challenges? Because there's not one business that I'm aware of that's not being disruptive. And JEA's business, that utility business, is being disruptive. And we need to find out if they can have the money to do it. And by the way, maybe they're giving the city too much money because they can't reinvest in these new technologies out there because they're giving us too much money. Do you think about that? I don't know.
Still lots of questions. We appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for being here.
Melissa, thank you very much.
Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Schellenberg, and much more still ahead later. A beach's tradition lights up the shoreline. Beginning Sunday, we'll hear from the creator of Deck the Chairs. But up next, a new treatment for local veterans with PTSD. We'll be right back.
A Midwestern woman does her own detective work to get evidence for the police.
Then I took the teddy bear that sat on my bed and took a razor blade and cut his belly open and put the camera in there and put him in the closet, yeah.
She gets what seems like is a confession to sexual assault, but authorities refuse to prosecute. A look at the courts in the Me Too era on the next Reveal.
Saturday at 3 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Do you have a story to tell? Since 2003, StoryCorps has been collecting and archiving stories from all over the country. From November 18th to December 21st, StoryCorps will be right here in Jacksonville. StoryCorps is the two-time Peabody Award-winning nonprofit whose mission is to preserve and share humanity's stories. If you've ever listened to their NPR program, you know how powerful and touching these stories can be. To have StoryCorps record your story, make your reservation today at wjct.org/events.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday nights at 9 for Turntable Tuesday, only at the Electro Lounge on 89.9. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. It is a new treatment option for veterans here on the First Coast suffering from depression, chronic pain, PTSD. So many out there in this community who need help. Now, this option is called ketamine. And there's a new ketamine infusion clinic right here in Jacksonville. Here to tell us more, Cameron Cushenberry, Chief Operating Officer, and Brian Hogan, Director of Research for Sunbelt Health Solutions. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. How you doing?
Thanks for being with us. Cameron, let's start with you. What is ketamine?
So ketamine is a dissociative anesthetic. Basically, that means that it kind of distorts the user's perception of sight and sound and produces feelings of detachment from the environment when one has a treatment. Usually used in anesthesia, but now it's become ever prevalent in ketamine clinics and mood disorders.
This has taken off, Brian, in clinics around the country, but new to Jacksonville. This has really become popular as clinicians are trying to find creative ways to help veterans. How have they hit upon this solution of ketamine?
Well, it's really interesting. You know, in the past 10 years, the research has really shown an effective result for people with treatment-resistant depression, people with chronic pain. It was a molecule discovered in the 60s, you know, and all the way back then, they knew that it did something to kind of bring you out of your body and reduce pain. But nowadays, it's finding a new role.
It used to be a street drug called Special K, didn't it?
It did. And in large amounts, you know, it still is a street drug. But in this treatment regimen that we have set up, the low dose regimen, it doesn't have an addictive potential and not the same side effects.
So it stops suicidal thoughts. It lifts depression. How is it better than some of the other options veterans might have that are already available, would you say, Cameron?
I would say that this is a faster-acting medication. You're seeing results within hours to days, and it lasts several days. And whereas conventional treatments are, it takes 2 weeks to really find out whether or not it's going to work.
Mm-hmm. This is a psychedelic drug, so it has to be administered under controlled conditions, correct?
It does, and we have people like Cameron Cushenberry here, who is a certified registered nurse anesthetist, to be able to deliver that medication in a safe and effective manner.
So your new clinic here in town, Sunbelt Health Solutions, is offering ketamine infusion. What types of responses are you seeing from patients?
Well, so far in our patients, we've had a reduction in what we do is we measure PHQ-9, which is called the Patient Health Questionnaire 9. And it lets us gauge exactly where they are in their depression. And in some of our patients, we've seen almost a 90% reduction in their depressive symptoms.
Does it actually rewire their brains?
So that's the interesting part about it. There's a special factor that's released when ketamine's given called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And they did some preliminary investigations using functional MRIs to detect areas of the brain that it was actually lighting up that weren't lighting up before.
Pretty fascinating. And there's a lot of research as I'm looking at this. It makes me think a little bit about the movie with Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I love that movie.
Where he had all these terrible memories and some new treatment helped him basically forget them. So he wasn't so traumatized anymore. This doesn't do that. But as I hear both of you gentlemen talking, it sounds a little bit like that.
Well, and there are treatments out there that do something very similar to that, like electroconvulsive therapy. The problems are with that is that you do have that memory loss, and that's something we're trying to avoid here. You know, we want people to be able to deal with their symptoms without losing memories.
Now, this is as you said, an old drug that's new again, being repurposed to help veterans and others who are suffering. It was apparently developed as a human and animal anesthetic in the 1960s. Then in 2006, researchers at the National Institutes of Health found that an intravenous dose could relieve severe depression in just a matter of hours, which is really quite extraordinary. Who is eligible to come and be treated with ketamine at your facility? And you are near the St. John's Town Center, right?
That's correct. We're off Printer Park Road, right off Southside Boulevard in JTB. It really depends. We have a collaborative approach with primary care practitioners and mental health providers as well. And to bring them in and determine who is best suited for this procedure, obviously just about anybody with treatment-resistant mood disorders can utilize or can have this service. Obviously those that are pregnant cannot have it.
Yeah, and I'll touch a little bit more on that. So treatment-resistant typically means that they've tried two medications that they weren't successful with. So we know those as maybe SSRIs, maybe an SNRI or an MAOI inhibitor. And those drugs, sometimes they don't find effect in people. And it's about one-third of people with depression that those drugs don't work for.
Wow. Okay, so any concerns or negative effects, any warnings about ketamine?
Well, the great thing about this drug is that it's being used in such a low dose that we're not worried about the same side effects, even when it's used in the emergency room for small procedures. It's been around for so long that, you know, all the side effect profile is very well understood, and we know how to deal with anything that might come up.
And are both of you veterans? Is this personal for you?
Well, Cameron here is he's actively in the Navy.
You're active duty. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Reservist. And good Dr. Hogan here, his father, who was one of my mentors, was reservist as well for 30 years.
Yeah, in the Air Force.
So it's got to be gratifying for you guys to see so many veterans being helped and civilians too.
It does. It does. And, you know, seeing people battling with things like PTSD and the depression aspect of that, this drug's been shown in multiple trials to be very effective in helping those people.
So if you're listening and you want more information about ketamine, contact Sunbelt Health Solutions in Jacksonville. They have a ketamine infusion clinic near the St. John's Town Center, very centrally located. And this is something that is being explored in clinics around the country. So thank you so much for sharing this with us. Cameron Cushenberry, he's COO, and Brian Hogan, Director of Research at Jacksonville Sunbelt Health Solutions. Guys, thanks so much, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
The holidays are upon us. In a moment, we'll head out to the beaches and take a closer look at Deck the Chairs. That's next.
Yesterday and days before, sun is cold and rain is hard. I know, been that way for all my time. To forever. Circle fast and slow. I know it can't stop. I wonder.
Do you have a story to tell? Since 2003, StoryCorps has been collecting and archiving stories from all over the country. From November 18th to December 21st, StoryCorps will be right here in Jacksonville. StoryCorps is the two-time Peabody Award-winning nonprofit whose mission is to preserve and share humanity's stories. If you've ever listened to their NPR program, you know how powerful and touching these stories can be. To have StoryCorps record your story, make your reservation today at wjct.org/events.
An ex-con in Kentucky brewed up a medicinal tea sent from a friend in Peru. It causes hallucinations.
I didn't come out of that garage for 6 days.
Now he's a shaman guiding people out of trauma.
You got to realize, after that experience there, I was on fire to learn how to brew this. And I wanted to bring this to America.
Kentucky Ayahuasca, it's on the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
How in the world can you say you want to go to a public lynching?
GOP Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith said if she were invited to a public hanging, she'd be in the front row. She's running in a special election to keep her seat.
And you want to represent the relatives of those people?
The Mississippi senator is also facing a black opponent, Democrat Mike Espy. The fallout this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Millions of Americans are preparing to give thanks and feast with family, but many farmers are run ragged by a trade war and a bailout program bogged down in bureaucracy. The president's strongest supporters live and work in rural areas. What happened to the billions promised to counter new tariffs? Finding a fix for our farmers. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Well, finally, this hour, it's a highlight of the winter holiday calendar out in Jacksonville Beach. Deck the Chairs is lighting up the beaches once again, beginning this Sunday. What's it all about? Well, Curtis Loftus is the creator of Deck the Chairs, which is going into its sixth year on the First Coast, and he's on the line right now. Hey, Curtis, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have you on the show. Now, everyone at the beaches knows about Deck the Chairs, which you started, I think, in 2013. How did this whole idea get started?
That's a great question. It's a little complicated. I'll try to make it quick. I'm a 30-year resident of the beaches and have had a business out here for that long. And so I've raised kids. I've been to many, many events. I love the beach, love the community, and have been active in a variety of nonprofits out here. So it was just a summer run and looking at lifeguard chairs and thinking about how iconic the lifeguard chairs are and what they mean to the beach and what they stand for. And simultaneously, it was a July run, and I was thinking about how we celebrate ourselves and how we lift each other up. And I had done one of those projects with the manatees, you know, painting the manatees, and I thought that's a beautiful idea. They take these big sculptures and people paint and they sponsor, and that's what I did with the lifeguard chairs. Put it together in a matter of about 3 months, pitching the beach community, the sponsors, the city leaders, and boom, our first year of Deck the Chairs was 2013.
And it's grown ever since. So what can people come out and enjoy beginning this Sunday?
So there'll be 40 decorated lifeguard chairs. A lot of sponsors spend months working on their decorations and planning and thinking about them. So they're very unique, all different. They'll see a big tree as a centerpiece. That was a crazy thing to get constructed, designed, and built. So there's a 30-foot tree with pixel lights on it and a music show combined with it. That is a, like I said, a centerpiece. And then and the shows will run on the hour, 6, 7, 8, and 9. There's a shows that go on during the month of Deck the Chairs. So that's pretty unique about the event. We get 6 weeks in the park. So it's free. It's open. The lights are on at 5 p.m. They stay on through 1 a.m. It's really easy out here because you can park your vehicles anywhere. I mean, it's the winter time, so we're a little more quiet in the winter months. And it's a really pleasant half hour out in the park.
This is such a great example of public art. And of course, you're an ad guy with your company, the Curtis Group, and smart marketing. And this also is a great cause. It raises money for the volunteer lifeguards through your sponsor dollars and donations. This all volunteer lifeguard force at the beaches is also a great tradition out there as well, Curtis.
Absolutely. So that's something I learned more about it. It was just by serendipity. I mean, the lifeguards and the whole what they represent, I knew just enough to say this is a great idea. But then You start digging in, you realize they're 105 plus years old. They're the only volunteer life-saving corps left in the United States. So that's a great, you know, asset to Jacks Beach and to actually North Florida. And so you end up going, well, if we can create a nonprofit that works in hand with another nonprofit, you're building their reputation. They already have a great reputation, but you're just supporting them because they're in a unique spot where they're having to raise funds, they're having to do education, they're having to replace equipment, the city's involved, and now the foundation for the lifeguards, they've got someone like us to help them out. So it's really cool.
It is cool. And by the way, this is free, open to the public, and kicks off Sunday night. For people just out tuning in, how can they be part of the big kickoff, Curtis?
Well, yeah, Sunday, we're going to be just, you know, to be as honest as I can, we're building right now. We're decorating. We love volunteers. If you want to try to help before Sunday, you're welcome. We have a sign-up line online, a sign-up form online. And then, you know, Sunday come out at like 4:30 and take in the lights. Just know that you've got a whole month to get back here with friends and family. Things will kind of build up. We've got programs on the stage. There's a website, deckthechairs.org. There's information up there. Just a lot going on during the month of December. And you mentioned something. Our businesses love you out here. We certainly, with the event, we kind of have this open air event. And if you come out, you can see the lights and then go visit one of our businesses. You know, go have a dinner at a restaurant, go to a bar, whatever you'd like to do. But it's always pretty out in Jacks Beach.
Always is. And this is such a great tradition. Kudos to you for starting it and growing it to such a wonderful institution and holiday event. It's Deck the Chairs, kicking off Sunday at the beaches. Curtis Loftus, the creator of Deck the Chairs. Have a great holiday. Thanks for being with us.
Melissa, thank you so much. It's great to be on your program.
All right, and that is our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Michelle Corum is our director. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. And if you missed anything from today's program, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is 89.9. Have a great day. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.